You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
To the highway, in a brand new day, gotta let it go. So far, Faster Freedom! Start tonight together. You and me on this thing.
Gate for March 2nd, 2021. We are members of the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. You can find us on the Voices of Wrestling feed or on the dedicated Open the Voice Gate feed on all podcast platforms and applications. You can follow us on Twitter at Open Voice Gate. If you would like to donate to the show, just click the link in the show notes. It'll take you to our redcircle.com landing site. You click the red box that says sponsor the show, and you can set up a one-time or reoccurring donation. No obligation whatsoever, but we would like to thank all of our previous donations. I'm one of your hosts, it's your old pal Iron Mike Spears. Joins always my co-host and good friend Case Lowe. And Case, we finally are getting to the meat of the Dragon Gate year. It's been two very long months, but we have the doubleheader in Osaka Edeon 2 this week, and Champion Gate is upon us. And I'm ready for these shows. Like, I don't think I can kind of tolerate another few weeks of how Dragon Gate's kind of been spinning its wheels as of late.
You don't want another number one contendership tournament?
I mean, it's just, like, it gave them purpose, but not enough purpose to make up for some dryness, I would say.
Well, we've now hit the one-year point of there being no capacity, of there being clapped crowds, of there being some COVID-altered state, because if you remember last year, the two Champion Gate shows, one on February 29th, one on March 1st, That was the last time Dragon Gate ran with fans until July. The March Corican was canceled. The April and May Coricans were canceled. Dead or Alive did not happen. Then obviously Kobe World was pushed back to the fall of last year. So earlier today I was looking at the Champion Gate Night 1 2019 card. And Mike, I don't know if this show feels like it's a year old or 5 years old, but you had stuff on the show like Yuki Yoshioka versus Gamma in a singles match, Diamante and Takashi Yoshida versus Doyen Susumu versus Kento Kabune and Masaki Mochizuki in a three-way tag, and that dark match, Martin Kirby and Takedo Kamei versus Ho-Ho Loon and Michael Sue. Oh, how things can change in a year.
Yeah, I mean, Yuki Yoshioka lost that match against Gamma, has never been seen again.
Won that match against Gamma, then it's never been seen again.
Oh, I thought he lost it.
Who could forget the epic encounter, the 12-minute singles match between Yuki Yoshioka and Gamma right before the world imploded in upon itself?
I mean, it's just, it's wild, and it's been such a crazy year for Dragon Gate since then that it does feel, in a lot of ways, like a completely refreshed promotion, but we still have, like, some keystones that are coming up ahead of us, and, you know, you look at all the champions, and you look at all the people who would be challenging, and really the one match that kind of seems somewhat it could have happened in pre-COVID if things already like played out is the Twin Gate. Like, yeah, Masaki Mochizuki and Takashi Yoshida versus BB Hulk and Kai, that makes sense. Like, I can intellectually process it, but like the other three title matches, we're in a completely different world now, Case.
Well, it's the real charm of this promotion over the past year is the fact that so many things moved around and so many things shifted. And, you know, even just, a year ago, saying that Keisuke Okuda and Hyo were going to be in a singles title match on what is a marquee show in the Dragon Gate calendar, a Triangle Gate match that had a guy named Dia Inferno who wasn't introduced, Diamante, who even at this point last year, I don't think had taken the major strides of improvement that he has since, and Hip Hop Kakuta, who wasn't on the roster in March and February of 2020. He debuted in May or maybe even early June on the Empty Arena shows. That's just night one of Champion Gate. And then, yeah, night two, that Kaito Ishida versus Shun Skywalker match is something that, again, maybe there's a little bit of a disconnect between the Western audience and the native audience, but I know for me that feels like a hot match. That feels like one that I'm really looking forward to, and one that we will preview later on in this show.
Yeah, before we get there was one show on the network. We're going to talk about the debut in Tokiwa Arena in Kobe. And as well, we have a Corkin that will have happened by the time the show probably gets released, but we're still going to talk about like the go home show, because there's a lot of things that are going to be happening, and in a lot of ways, like the road to Dead or Alive feels like it starts in Corkin versus in after a Champion Gate. I feel like,
well, this is the first time they've ever had the Corkin before Champion Gate, and I spotted that on the schedule whenever it was released a few months ago and thought, that looks really weird. And I think the booking of this Corkin shows that, where yes, in one match, they're really building towards the Dreamgate defense. And I guess all of the matches on this show, for the most part, have some sort of a preview element. But the hyped stuff, matches 5 and 6, the two main events, just unrelated to any of the title matches at Champion Gate. Those, again, feel like Dead or Alive matches, or at least part of the cage match, which I'm assuming will happen, and we'll talk more about that in just a bit. It's a strange show, and it's one of those cards where as soon as I saw it, I thought, wow, this really needs to deliver in the ring, because I think the February Corican show was a good show. A lot was accomplished, but it didn't have any great matches, and this March show, if it's angle-heavy, you know, I get it. But two singles matches to close out that show, I'm really looking for at least one, but preferably both of them, to be legitimately great matches.
Yeah, and just as a correction, the Corkin is on March 4th, not March 3rd. So this show will be out before Corkin goes. So our preview will be accurate and won't be completely obsolete by the time that this is posted. It's just such a weird situation. And, you know, the weirdness kind of started with this Kobe Tokiwa Arena showcase. And it's, you know, I'm ready to see the big direction that I think we're both kind of expecting heading towards Dead or Alive, because then from Dead or Alive, then it's full steam ahead through King of Gate into Kobe World doubleheader this year, and then we're in the hot season where every month has a big event. So I'm ready for 2020 to really kick off, or 2021 to really kick off. And, you know, as much as that there was things that amused me on this Kobe Tokiwa Arena show, it's just one of those things that you're just like, wow, that's a show that happened.
Yeah, 2 months into the year, I still have no feel for the booking. I don't know what's coming next. I don't know how the rest of the unit shakeups are going to go. I'm not cold on the promotion, because I think the shows, for the most part, have been good. This Kobe one maybe less than others. But it's just, it's weird. I feel like I almost missed something. Like, my finger is so off the pulse on the booking of this product right now. Even this Champion Gate stuff, which I think has been booked really well. I'm looking forward to all of these matches on some level. But when we get into the, you know, predictions as to who's going to win, I feel like one giant shrug. Like, I just have no feel for how anything is going to go. And this Kobe show on the 26th certainly did not help matters.
Yeah, so let's get into it. This Kobe show, it was in Tokiwa Arena. It was their debut there. We talked about this since this was announced. This show was done in Tokiwa versus Sambo Hall because of everything happening. Sambo Hall was booked up for when they wanted to run it. So they run this neat venue, Tokiwa Arena. It looks like it's pretty bigger. Pretty bigger. That's great.
It's pretty bigger. There. Yeah, it's a pretty bigger venue.
It seems like it's pretty much a little bit bigger. It had more of a stage setup. It kind of reminded me of Wakayama in that way and how it was set up. And, you know, it just felt very different. And that started with an incredibly long opening mic segment where first they did the opening mic and then Yamakegun, who will be named on the 4th, thank God. I'm kind of tired of calling it Yamakegun, just like Shungun. They came out with Tetsuya Owa. And they were doing the opening mic, and then R.E.D. with Hiroki came out, and then Ishida went after Oiwa. And, of course, Oiwa and Hiroki are K-1 fighters that they brought in here. There are some relationships with both of them with the promotion, more so that Hiroki and Ishida have been kind of doing some interviews or doing some, like, training stuff. And, of course, with Keisuke Okuda being a former mixed martial artist, like I believe he also knows Oiwa, and then Oiwa, of course, he's from Nagoya, and he grew up a big Dragon Kid fan. So we had a very kind of long, but I would say spirited opening mic segment to kick off the show.
And Hiroki is from Osaka, which is where Kaito Ishida's from as well, so they had that tie-in as well. But yes, a very, 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 very long opening segment.
And before we even got to the first match, which was the Natural Vibes team of KZ, Genki Horiguchi, and UT versus the unaffiliated team of Masaki Mochizuki, Shuji Kondo, and Kness, we had even more of that, because during the Natural Vibes dance to start the show, Dr. Muscle appeared and participated in the dance, ran to the back, and then came back out and was revealed as Masato Yoshino. So Masato Yoshino was allegedly under the mask as Dr. Muscle, at least at one point of the segment, of which, like, the funny thing about it was that KZ was incredibly happy to see him and was basically fanboying out really hard before this match got underway.
The pop that KZ had when Yoshino revealed himself was equivalent to a mid-2000s Noah show when you would hear the women calling for Kenta. It had that sort of shriek, albeit joy, to it. It was a fun little reveal to, again, continue a very long opening segment.
Yeah, like, I feel like it was 25 minutes before the first match started, which was the Natural Vibes versus Unaffiliated Trios match. KZ won with his spider twist submission on Kness. And, you know, it was a fun little opening with UT dismantling Masaki Mochizuki, but it was just pretty lighthearted, and given who were all involved in the opener, it just kind of made sense that this was just going to hit its moments, and, you know, we were going to get in and get out of there after 25 minutes of mic segments.
Yeah, I thought this was a fun opener. This is an interesting match where it totally works as an opener. I think it accomplished its goal. I also think if this match is match 5 on the card instead of match 1, even broken down, injured Kness the way he is, these guys could go out there and just kill it and totally steal the show. But they stuck to their role here. Fun 10-minute opener. And I'm really bummed that Kamei is not healthy, because although I was dead set against it at first, and that's just, you know, again, the natural vibes thing being what it is, just completely thrown off what I thought the booking was going to be at the start of the year. But I do really like this new incarnation of Natural Vibes. I think they're a much better, looser, I think is the term I'm going to use, a looser unit than the first incarnation. I think UT, and assuming Kamei, will fit in just fine. I think they're a much better fit than Brother Yoshi and Punch Tamanaga. So I'm into the Natural Vibes, and I like this opening match as a fun little 3-star affair.
Yeah, I went 3.25. It was just a good time. I really like the vibe of this unit as well. Susumu Yokosuka constantly posting photos on Twitter of Kamei and the giant parka. Cracks
me
up.
I want the parka. I love it. It's it's every bit as ridiculous as, you know, Kamei wearing that thing. It's like the Tom Brady sideline jacket thing that was a meme a few years ago. The jacket is too big on Kamei, but I look at that and I think, like, man, I think I would really like a Dragon Gate branded parka. I think that would be good for me.
Yeah, and it's one of those things, whenever I look at it, then I look up at the machine translations from the native fans, and Kamei is incredibly over, it seems, as just popping up and seeming like he's very pleasant. So I think it works, and I felt like that it's something that I'm really going to be excited to see the full 5-man contingent when it finally comes together.
Mike, did this next match make you excited? Is that the word that comes to mind?
God, no, because it was Punch Tominaga versus Kagetora, and it was Punch Tominaga winning with the punch clutch in 8 minutes and 31 seconds, and 8 minutes and 31 seconds I'll never get back in my life.
Yeah, there's something particularly off-putting about Kagetora right now, and I don't know what it is specifically. I think it hurts him that he's not in a unit, although that could certainly change with this Cork and Hall show. Mike and I were talking about it off air. It just seems like if he went away, everything would be okay. Because I even feel like when Naoki Tanizaki left the promotion a few years ago, that was probably 5 years ago now, Jesus. Like, Tanizaki was a replaceable figure. You know, Hip Hop Kakuta can do the Naoki Tanizaki role. He can do it better than Naoki Tanizaki. But I enjoyed Tanizaki's entire run and the promotion. I think it sucks that he's gone, because the last time I saw him, he could still go. And I would welcome him back, although I don't think that's happening based on what we know. Kagetora is just a guy where it's like this promotion passed him by. It's a weird thing where he now isn't as flashy of a grappler as UT, and he doesn't do the impressive moves that he does, you know, that he was doing against, say, Teok and Aita in their tag team matches. He just feels old and tired, and I think this environment is bad for him, where, you know, I think he could walk into an All Japan or a Noah tomorrow, and he'd be the best worker in their division, because we know Kagetora can be good. He's capable of being great if he wants to be. But he feels very tired. He feels unmotivated, at least through the start of this year. And I could very easily be forgetting something, but Mike, my memory is telling me he didn't exactly light the world on fire last year either.
It's something where, and it's really since arguably the end of Jimmy's, I would say, if Kagetora doesn't have anything that really, I would say, gives him something to, like, sink his teeth into, he is one of the more by-the-numbers wrestlers. And it's really kind of sad, because he is a part of one of my favorite Twin Gate matches in recent memory, Yokosuka Chome versus Amigo Tag. It's just that he's just kind of there, and it's a situation where, of course, he's family, he's from Torimon X, he came back, and he's been back in the company now for close to 12 years, if not.
Yeah, since 2009.
Right. So it's something where I just don't know what the whole Endgame is, I guess, for lack of a better word, because he's, other than getting Brave Gate challenges or being like the second or third on a Twin or Triangle Gate team, that's really where it is. And for a guy that has this skill and has this, to like see him like be put in these matches where we both knew that this match was going to stink, and it stunk. Like, it was, I went 1.5 stars on it. It just was not a good match. And it's something where I think that, and I don't know anything, I think that maybe greener pastures are for him outside the company, personally. And he's technically proficient. Like, that's a thing. And I acknowledge, because talking with people, I probably was the low man on that match he had with Shuji Kondo, where I just thought it was just interminably long and soulless. But I don't know. It's something that with a promotion where they're constantly bringing new guys in and they're constantly elevating new guys. I mean, look at the main event here at Champion Gate. It's two guys under the age of 25. If not, Ishida might have turned 25, but 25 and younger.
He turned 25 at the end of December.
Okay, so 25 and younger. And he's never going to come close to that. He'll never get a Dreamgate shot. And you're just kind of like, it's not that he's taking up space, because he's not a bad wrestler. He just kind of exists. And that's the frustrating, because he exists when it's just, I don't even want to say he's taking up a slot on the show, because he's not, because his output when he can have any enthusiasm in something is solid, right? Like the Bravegate match against KSK Akuda at Final Gate was perfectly serviceable, right? Like, I'm not off base in saying that. It's just, it's tough. It's tough.
But soulless is the exact word. That is the issue on a roster where you have so many young guys looking to prove themselves. You have fun comedy on the undercard. You have the natural vibe stuff, which feels real and authentic. And then you just have this guy. He's just this guy, and his rep has always been, you know, when he's motivated, he is not as good as anyone, but can be as special as anyone on his best day. And he's just really, really exposed himself in these moments where he doesn't care. It's been a critique of Shuji Kondo his entire career, but I'll take Kondo on his worst day compared to Kagetora on his worst day, because this was a bad match. I mean, this is far below the working standard of anything we normally see in Dragon Gate, and being in the ring with Tomonaga certainly doesn't help, but I look at the brunt of this match, the fault, if there is one, as being on Kagetora, and I think it would benefit both sides if they slowly parted ways. But instead, I think Kagetora could very easily become the fall post of Masquerade, which, think about that, in a unit with Jason Lee, La Estrella, and Coach Minora, Kagetora would be the one taking falls, and that really says all you need to know about his upward trajectory in this promotion.
Right, yeah. And I think we talked about this longer than this match, and more than it deserves, to be quite honest. So, unless you have any other Kagetora takes, because I completely co-sign with you, like, probably his trajectory, if he's not unaffiliated, is being a fall post somewhere. Like, that's the reality of this, and it's just going to be something like, he is someone that should be doing these Kyushu Pro shows, to be honest. Like, that's what he should be doing as a part of the company, and be part-timing like Kenichiro Arai. And that's not the case.
No, unfortunately not. But, you know, luckily, a man in match number 3, Diamante, he is, you know, on all intents and purposes, become a full-time wrestler here. And I'll be damned, I enjoy me some Diamante.
Yeah, you know, I feel like he was a high point in this. So it was Ultimo and Don Fuji versus the RED team of Diamante and Hio. Hio got the win after a low blow. It was not the Bobby Hill special. It just was a straight up low blow in 10 minutes and 18 seconds. And, you know, Fuji and Hio had some good chemistry in it. Diamante was fine, but then it just kind of like all really slowed down. And then Ultimo came in and took it easy. And then we didn't get the full Bobby Hill special, but Diamante is a madman. And those were kind of my takeaways from that.
Not a good match, but not a bad match. I
2.5
really,
stars.
Yeah, it's exactly 2.5, 2.75 if you're feeling really generous. But with that in mind, and I guess we'll see a little bit more of it on this Quark and Hall show, I really like what they're doing with Hio. I like this character. It's, I think, the perfect defense for Akuda at this point in his Brave Gate run. I really like it, and this was a good showcase for him. This is the most interesting work Hio has done in his career, because, you know, he obviously came into the promotion, and I guess if you're a newer Dragon Gate fan, you look at this guy as kind of the weasel of RED. granted, this podcast and all of its incarnations has always been a little bit higher on Hiyo than pretty much...
I was.
Yes. I was certainly co-signing some of your takes, because there was... When Hiyo debuted, and if you're a new fan, this will sound insane, we were like, God, you know who that guy reminds me of? Michinoku Pro Era Shima. Like, he really just jumped off the screen to us in that big of a way. And now I think we've seen... not the culmination, but just the a special result of that unique charisma that he has, where he's now a credible Bravegate challenger, and I really can't rule him out winning the belt this weekend, which I think is an interesting scenario for him to be in. So this was a good showcase for him.
Right, yeah. And it's something where he does show a little bit of that December 1st 2016 match in his character now, and I think that that's very exciting, and it's something where it's a good position for someone like him, especially in a unit that's so inflated like RED. He's someone that who has basically receded into the background a lot, but since Final Gate, since the disbands match, he's really kind of come on strong, and it's a role that I think that he's well suited for. And you know, Bravegate might be his ceiling, if not being like a Twin Gate champion, but I think that this is what I'd want to see out of Hiyo, and like you, it makes a very compelling title defense for Keisuke Okuda.
Royal Sambo Battle Royal. What happened here, Mike?
Well, this was the fourth Royal Sambo, and everyone set out to discover if someone could stop the Ichikawa, but guess what? He has the biggest streak in wrestling. Like Undertaker's WrestleMania streak is gone and dead. Any other streak you want to think about is dead. We are living in the era of Konamawa Ichikawa, 4-0 on Royal Sambo Halls. And each time, he finds a new way to win it. They're going to have to like find a way to like duct tape him like to the mat and then step on him to get the pinfall and to take away his King of Royal Sambo crowd, because no one can possibly stop the Ichikawa.
It's great. I think this was probably the weakest of the four battle royals there's been, but by the end of it, I still loved it, so I can't complain. This is something that I remember when these were first announced, you and I were like, what, they're doing what now? Who cares? What is this? And it has turned into a really, really fun reoccurring monthly bit, so I'm all for it.
Yeah, and our hesitance was because of like the old Dragon Rumbles, where it just was just overinflated, and it was just, okay, we don't have a spot for everyone on the card, we have too many people booked, so we're going to throw them at Battle Royal. There's at least a plot going on there, and there's nice bits going on, like La Estrella doing the Kubashiko Kamen get bit during this match was tremendous, and then also Takashi Yoshida was living his truth, and after he was eliminated, he was just having the best time of his life watching the finish here, which... Ah, geez. Like, they're being really inventive with how each time Konamawa Ichikawa wins one of these matches. And, you know, it's the match that, you know, 13 minutes, and it's really just, the match itself is just kind of there, but the bits that they do in the match are very amusing. And to be honest, with the exception of the semi-main event and the main event, the only things I would say worth going out of your way to watch on the show.
Oh, yeah, no, you could start the show with this Battle Royal, and it's probably a little bit less than an hour that is worth your time to consume. I would recommend it. If you find yourself somehow needing Dragon Gate content this week, they have three huge live shows on the network. If you find the time to squeeze this one here, if you haven't squeeze it in if you haven't seen it yet, start with the Battle Royal and then hit the semi-main event and the main event, which we can talk about now.
Yeah, just so we explain this, because I realized we didn't talk about the finish. So it came down to four people. I think it was Susumu, Ryo Saito, Bukudomo, and Konamawa Ichikawa. Bukudomo and Konamawa did dual law martial cradles on Saireo and Susumu. And during it, I forgot if it was Saireo or Susumu was the one who unmasked Konamawa Ichikawa. And what happened was, like, as the referee was like signaling that they're both were out, Konamawa Ichikawa picked up his mask, threw it to Bukudomo, and did the fake out mask grip to win the match, and it was tremendous.
Eddie Guerrero smiling down upon this match. It was a beautifully executed play on the old Eddie Guerrero chair spot, so well done to all men involved.
Right. And then we had the semi-main event. This was Masquerade versus RED, Shun Skywalker, Kota Minoru, and Jason Lee versus BB Hulk Kai and Kazuma Sakamoto. Kazuma Sakamoto won with the knee strike, finally, in 12 minutes and 3 seconds on Jason Lee.
Look, Kazuma Sakamoto winning. especially against Masquerade. I would keep my eyes peeled. I think there is some smoke to that fire, and if anybody in this company deserves maybe a big featured singles match, perhaps against a champion that wears a mask, I think Kazuma Sakamoto might be the next challenger in line. I don't think this result was by accident. I think it's a really bold move to have Skywalker not get the fall here, but who is he in the match with? He's in the match with Hulk, who's a champion, with Kai, who's a champion, and with Sakamoto. And if he beats Sakamoto, there's no program there. So I think this was done very, very intentionally.
Yeah, and I mean, there'll probably be another defense, I would say, probably in Wakayama.
Yes, I would say that's a safe bet.
So I mean, that's a pretty quick build. I mean, and of course, that you haven't beat Lee this time. He can beat Minenora next time, and then eventually, you know, gets a... I don't know if they're going to let him pin Shun, though, before the title match, because Shun's gone undefeated. He has not taken a fall or submission since returning to the company, but... You could definitely make this build up into a title program really quick. The match itself, it was solid. It was not one of the great RED versus Masquerade Trios matches in my mind, but I thought that all six men were great in this match, and you know, it was a high point on the show.
No, this was the weaker crew of the RED, I guess, working class stable that it is. Because you look at the main event, you look at the guys there, and it's like, oh, that was a great match. I wonder why. Oh, because they weren't being carried by BB Hulk and Kai. And plus, you had the absence of La Estrella, who was in the Battle Royal, and not in this match. So it didn't hit the high points that the RED versus Masquerade matches have hit all year. But still, a solid one where I thought Sakamoto and Skywalker in particular worked pretty hard.
Yeah. I went 3.5, and I feel like that's probably... You know, it's probably the bottom end of what these two groupings could do, but it was still very solid. And then the main event, this was the full Yamake Gun team of Yamato, Dragon Kid, Benkei, and Keisuke Okuda versus the RED team of Ada, Kaito Ishida, Hip Hop Kakuta, and Diet Inferno. Of course, Yamake Gun was accompanied by Tatsuya Oiwa, and RED was accompanied by Hiroki. The fall was Keisuke Okuda pinning the Inferno after the lights out in 18 minutes and 55 seconds. And I gotta say, the interactions with the K1 guys, it was something where I was like, oh, they're gonna get involved. I hope this is any good. It turned out to be like really funny. What did you think about Hiroki's box attack? I think that's the most vicious box attack we've ever seen.
Dragon Gate dipping into the proverbial pure sports build. And I love to see it. I love that these K1 guys are hanging around. This is something that, you know, I don't have any clue if it's if the Japanese audience cares about it, is what I'm trying to say. I don't know how they feel about it, but it's over with me. I really like that they're involved, and I thought their interactions were super fun. I really, really like this match. I said to Mike before we started recording, you know, I wasn't sure if this was a great match on its own or if it was just a great match compared to kind of the lethargic and uninspired card that we had seen before this. But I have come to the conclusion, I think it was a great match on its own. I'm right at 4 stars with it, which I believe was my only 4-star match in Dragon Gate in February, because I did not have one at the Korakuen Hall show. So this was the match of the month. And not only did the K1 guys stick out to me, but my God, the Yamato and Hip Hop Kakuta interaction. Kakuta has been really impressive lately. It seemed like he kind of took a back seat towards the end of last year with the SBK mega push into the start of this year. But in February, he kind of reminded me, oh, that's right. He's a hoss. He's a tank. There's a reason I compared him to Shingo Takagi upon the first few months of his career. I'm into the Hip Hop Kakuta, and I thought he tore it up with Yamato in this match.
You see, I was actually... Die Inferno is the person on the RED side that really impressed me, because he's kind of aimless with his rival Dragon Daya out, and he's someone you can easily plug in and he can take falls here. But I thought that he had great interactions with all of Yamake Gun, and I thought that this was, I think, the first time that all four of Yamake Gun have tagged together, and I felt like that they had pretty solid chemistry with this, and I went 4 stars flat. I thought this was a really fun main event.
Mike, something that we neglected to do last week, and it's my fault, I should have reminded you, but we did not give an MVP of the week last week, and I think before we start previewing the week to come, we reviewed the show. Let's hit our MVP from last week. If you can dig through your notes and remind yourself.
Oh, I've got the notebook. I've got the notebook right here.
See, Mike Spears comes to a podcast prepared. Say what you want about this guy. He's always got the notebook with him. And let's give our MVP for this week as well. So who do you have?
So last week, I probably, for the Kyoto shows, gosh, I really did not care for a lot on these shows. I'm just going to say Jason Lee.
There's a reason we forgot.
Yeah, I'm just going to say Jason Lee because he is the entering MVP of the year so far in Dragon Gate. I feel like Jason Lee would have been my MVP of last week.
For me, it was Hip Hop Kakuta. I talked quite a bit about him. Yeah, I thought he really jumped off the screen and made me go, oh, shit, that's right. I love this guy.
Yeah, no, it's something that we were seeing some pretty special stuff between these guys and the younger guys stepping up. This week, I'm going to give it to Konamao Ichikawa.
Oh, damn it. That's what I was going to do.
It's a unanimous selection. I mean, how can't you pick someone who's so dominant in his selected match?
As soon as that winning streak concludes, I will no longer have patience for those battle royals. But as long as he's doing it, I am into it.
Yeah, I'm totally all right with that. So let's run down the Korakuen. We talked a little bit about it before the show review. It is on the Dragon Gate Network with English commentary. It is on March 4th, 1800 Japanese Standard Time. I believe that puts that at 4 a.m. for the East Coast. So I'm going to run down the card case, and then we can talk about the matches itself. Opener is 8-man tag team match. It is the full complement of Natural Vibes, KZ, Susumu, Ginky, and UT versus the unaffiliated team of Don Fuji, Shuji Kondo, Gamma, and Yosuke San Maria. Match two are the Double Dragons, Ultimo Dragon, Bukudomo Dragon versus Diamante and Kazuma Sakamoto. Match three, single fall four-way tag team match, Masaki Mochizuki and Takashi Yoshida versus Yuzushi Kanda and Kenichiro Arai versus Bensuke of Keisuke Okuda and Benkei versus BB Hulk and Hyo. Match four, it is the full complement of Masquerade versus R.E.D., Shun Skywalker, Kota Minenora, Jason Lee. Actually, no, I take that back. It's not the full complement there. Where is Lost Ray? Lost Ray is not booked on the show.
He's not on the show. I was going to ask you if you knew what was up, because I do not.
No. I did not know that until I read this card right here. So it is 3/4 of Masquerade and Kagetora versus Eita, Kaido Ishida, Hip Hop Kakuta, and Dianferno. And then the double main events, we have special singles matches, Dragon Kid versus SB Kento and Yamato versus Kai. And of course, the big plot thing on the show is Yamakegun will officially reveal their name and their colors, and we will know them from now as that new unit. So, I mean, I'm looking at this, and we have two straight-up comedy matches to start off the showcase, right? Like, you have Don Fuji, Gamma, and Yosuke San Maria. Poor Shuji Kondo, he's not supposed to come into work today. Like, he has to deal with that. And then Double Dragons versus Diamante and Kazuma Sakamoto, I don't have much of... I don't really have much enthusiasm with it. The Double Dragon bit was funny for, like, a little bit. Now I'm kind of just over it. And then, I mean, the rest of the card, I mean, the four-way and the eight-man tag are going to be the things that probably determine that this is a strong work rate card or not, right?
Yeah, because I, you know, match one, the silver lining there is that you're going to get UT versus Kondo, and I think maybe they can kind of section themselves off from the comedy that will ensue, especially with Horiguchi in there with Gamma and Yosuke Santa Maria. But I think if we get some UT Kondo interactions, that could be worthwhile. The Double Dragon stuff, I get it. I am losing patience for it, but yeah, I still pop for it, but not against Diamante and Sakamoto. It's unfortunate that that is the pairing there, but what can you do? And then Mike, you catch that voice crack there.
I wasn't going to say anything. I was going to let it slide.
My goodness, I am a growing boy, Mike Spears. Let me tell you, you know, this is, it's not easy being me. And that four-way tag, I mean, there's no reason this match can't totally over-deliver, because you've got the Mochizuki and Yoshida against Hulk stuff at play. You've got Okuda versus Hyo. Throw in some Benkei versus Mochizuki interaction. God forbid some Benkei versus Kenichiro Arai interaction, because Benkei might break him in half. But there's a lot of stuff to like there. So if we get that four-way tag to over-deliver, or even just, you know, the 3.5 star mark, I think is a very fair a net rating to put on that. I think that could be very fun. And then the 8-man tag, I mean, there's no reason that match can't be great. It really comes down to who we were talking about earlier. It depends on what Kagetora brings to the table in that match, because we've seen not this exact RED pairing, I don't believe, but we've seen RED A-teams versus Masquerade with La Estrella, and we know that delivers literally every single time. The variable here is Kagetora, and if he does not deliver here, I am not going to be a happy man.
Yeah, at that point, then, we go from maybe we should part ways to just kick him out. I'm sorry to be so mean to Kagetora as a guy, again, who's had some of my favorite Twin Gate matches of all time. It's just where I feel like he is right now. And, you know, I look at this double main event, as we were talking about earlier, as kind of the first steps towards Dead or Alive. Like, I fully figure that these four guys will be in Dead or Alive. So, you know, it's just going to kind of build towards that. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see. I think that Kid and Kento could have they had a really nice stretch in that disbands match, so I have pretty high faith for that. And Yamato and Kai, when they, like, decide to slug, as long as they don't, like, just completely just shenanigans it up, this should be a fun main event as well. But it's just a very, like, we get our preview stuff for Champion Gate, but the rest of the card, I'm looking at this, I'm like, okay, well, this is a corkin.
I don't think we've seen SPK in a singles match since October, when he went to a 15-minute time limit draw with Takedo Kamei. This is a unique opportunity for him. I think he's going to crush it, and I'm looking forward to that match. I hope, you know, I know there's going to be a lot of story, and I know there's going to be RED interference and this and that, and I come into the match expecting that, and to an extent welcoming it, because I think they can, you know, do something very interesting with it. The question is going to be, can it be a great match? And I think this car needs that. And I'm curious, from your perspective, for these two main events, do you have any, I guess, booking prediction? I mean, do you have any idea how these matches are going to go? Because, like I've been saying this entire show, I have no feel for these.
I mean, I would be surprised if we get conclusive finishes to both of these. I think that at least one of them, I wouldn't be surprised if SB Kento goes for the mask, and I wouldn't be surprised if Kai just outright just eventually RED attacks the referee and gets disqualification. Like, I'd be stunned if both these matches go to a clean decision.
I think the mask rip DQ is a very safe bet in the SPK Dragon Kid match. I am leaning towards the idea of getting some sort of clean, now not conclusive, but some sort of clean finish in the Yamato-Kai match. What I'm hoping is that that serves its purpose as the blow-off singles match, and then they can continue this program throughout Dead or Alive, which I guess we should say we don't know for sure that they're doing a cage match in Aichi this year, but we do know when the cage match was announced for Dangerous Gate last year, which was in Tokyo, a bunch of fans on Aichi were like, hey, what the fuck? That's our cage match. What are you guys doing? So I'm assuming, given the Dragon Gate customer service relationship that they have with their fans, that Aichi is getting a cage match this year. And I think it's a very safe bet to assume that the four guys in these two final matches are going to be involved. I want good matches on this show. I think that's the one thing that I feel has been lacking a little bit, because, you know, I love the Twin Gate match at the start of the year, the Jason Lee shining performance, but comparatively to 2020, when it just seemed like, man, every card we were getting one great match, if not two, this year it's been a little lacking, and I would like to see, especially after what I thought was a weaker Corkin Hall outing in February, I would really like to see them hit the ground running and then go into a huge weekend. You know, no matter what Dragon Gate does this weekend, they're not going to have the spotlight on them, because they're going to be dealing with, you know, at least in the Western fan base, they're going to be dealing with Shaq, and then they're going to be dealing with the AEW pay-per-view. I would like to think, though, that they can at least share some of those headlines, but for them to do that, it's going to be a work rate headline draw, and I really think they need that as they enter their hot period for this year.
And it's going to be hard for them natively to get much of a buzz, because as we're recording, in about 5 hours is the start of Budokan show, so that's going to get like Shoe Pro, like that's going to get that coverage, and you know, it's just one of those things that, and I think that's a kind of a good way to kind of transition into talking about Champion Gate. It does seem like as you've been saying over the last few weeks, there's this tremendous disconnect between the international fans and the native fans, especially towards the Dreamgate match. But it's something where like there's enough there that I find it pretty interesting, and I feel like that coming into the show there's RED in every single one of these matches. RED now they're coming up on their fourth birthday they're coming up on, or is it their third birthday they're coming up on, Kiz?
It was 2018, so you do the math there.
Buddy, I'm on 12 hours sleep over the last 3 days with a puppy.
Okay, well, so 2019 is a year, it'll be 3 years.
3 years, yeah. But, so I was right the first time.
We're
yeah.
on year six of a red, black, and yellow-themed heel unit. You know, Verzerk formed in August of 2015, and we still haven't seen an aesthetic change, despite the talent turnover. A unit led by Shingo and T-Hawk with Kotoka kind of stealing the show at some point. Despite the talent turnover of the original Verzerk to now, the aesthetic is still the same. And that's the one thing that just... I want something new. I want a heel to come out wearing blue or something, just to change things up a little bit. Because, I mean, God, you know, we talked about it on our Dragon Gate USA shows. I started following this promotion in real time in 2013, and then by 2014, I wasn't missing a show. Mike, almost my entire time watching this promotion has been with a red, black, and yellow themed heel unit, and I would just like to see things shaken up a little bit. But as we get into this Champion Gate preview, I'll ask you the question up top. And as we're recording, we only have the four title matches, but that's all we need. The Champion Gate undercards are always fascinating because they're just a little weird, and I like the booking there. But we don't have those matches. We just have the stuff that really matters. You mentioned RED's in all four matches. Do you think RED sweeps the table?
You know, it's interesting you bring that up because that reminds me of the final gate where Blood Warriors had all the titles going into 2012. And, like, that was, like, such a moment, them all holding up the titles, and then quickly Blood Warriors fell apart. And it is something that, like, they like to do be reflective in some manner. So I can't dismiss it out of hand. But looking at some of the challengers and looking at some of the champions, I would be stunned if they walk away with no belts. But I think that the safest option is that they retain the Twin Gates and nothing else.
Yeah, I'm gonna vary a little bit, and we can kind of go match by match. I think if they were gonna sweep, we would have seen the Brave Gate and the Twin Gate together on the first night, and then the Triangle Gate with the Dream Gate on the second night. Because look, if night one ends with Hip Hop Kakuta, Dia Inferno and Diamante holding the Triangle Gate belt and Hiyo steals that Brave Gate title, I would be putting all my money on Ishida and the RED tandem winning the belts on the next night. So I don't see that happening, but if we come on this show next week and again we've got all heel champions, it's not going to surprise me.
No, not at all. And it's something where I like this RED Goon Squad. I guess, like, well, which title match should we talk about first here?
Well, let's go in order. Let's go the Triangle Gate, the Brave Gate, the Twin Gate, and the Dream Gate.
So, as I was about to say, I like this RED Goon Squad. Like the idea that these are all, like, the big boys that, other than Kazuma Sakamoto out there, but it with Natural Vibes and them being this long-tenured former Triangle Gate champion team, and with, like, it seems like that this is a comfort unit in a way. I'm excited to see what Diamante does to UT. Not UT, KZ. I think KZ and Diamante could have some really interesting stuff there. Hip Hop Kakuta being involved. I think Hip Hop Kakuta and Susumu Yokosuka can do something real interesting. And then I think no one will probably sell the Dia Inferno bite more than Genki Horiguchi. So there's aspects of this match I really like, but when it comes down to it, I'm of the opinion that it's going to be a Natural Vibes or retaining the belts.
Yeah, don't sleep on this match. If this is one that hasn't really registered with you yet, think about the pairings in this match. Obviously, the Natural Vibes team is going to deliver, but who have we been raving about on the heel side for the past few months now, with the exception of Ishida, who's in a big singles match? It's been Kakuta, Inferno, and Diamante. I think these teams line up awesome with one another. I think Natural Vibes is going to retain. I think you're right. Just because, you know, for as weird as Triangle Gate booking is, and although I wish they would handle the belts differently than they do, you know, it's a little hard for me to be like, oh yes, our Open the Triangle Gate champions, Hip Hop Kakuta, Diamante, and Dia Inferno. Of course that makes sense. I mean, even for a hodgepodge Triangle Gate team, that seems a little bit extreme. So I don't see them winning the match, but is it fair to say this could easily be the match of the weekend?
I mean, I think Ishida and Shun have such chemistry that would be a hard, it would be a hard hill for it to climb, to be honest. Like, I have no aspirations that the Twin Gate match will be some great match because of, as I said before, the goodness of that match is going to be how much Masaaki Mochizuki we get in that match, and he's only one of four. And the Brave Gate, like, it's going to be sleazy, but it's going to be Okuda being the angriest man alive. So it's one of these two matches, and it's something that something will have to fall flat, I feel like, the Dream Gate match for the Triangle Gate match to be the match of the weekend, in my opinion.
I think that's fair. I think you're... I can't say you're wrong. I think you're underselling the Triangle Gate match a little bit. I wish this was the main event, because I think the Brave Gate match would work better not closing the show, and I think the Triangle Gate match would be better suited to close the show. So I'm bummed at the match order there, but... Oh, well, no. I'm incorrect. I was reading the Gaiora website wrong. I believe the Triangle Gate match is going on last, which in that point, get into it. I am into this Triangle Gate match.
Yeah, no, it's something that, like, the more I think about this match, the more I'm enthused about it. And if I were to rank the four matches here, it would probably be number two for me, you know?
Absolutely.
And I think the closer that I get to Saturday when it's happening is the more I'm going to, like, get hyped up for it. So I think you're totally right about that, and I think that's pretty a fair thing to say. So unless you have anything else to add on, Keisuke Okuda versus Hyo, this is not a match that I would have expected at Champion Gate 2020, and it's going to be a really cool match. It's going to be a real interesting match. It is probably going to be the most shenanigans heavy match on the weekend, I would say.
Mike, do you remember, and stick with me on this comparison, it is going to seem bonkers at first, do you remember probably 5-6 years ago now, the Minoru Suzuki versus Yoshihiro Takayama GHC title match in Korakuen Hall?
No, I don't. Like, Noah is one of those things that I acknowledge that exists and I dip in and out of, but Minoru Suzuki's run in Noah as of late, this is during the Suzuki Gun invasion, right?
This is during the Suzuki Gun invasion. This was
hand waved that.
This is around the time that I checked out. This was actually their 15th anniversary show, now that I'm looking at it. July 18th, 2015. Match number two on this show, Nakanishi versus Quiet Storm. Have fun with that. But I bring this match up because it was a well-post-prime Yoshihiro Takayama against Minoru Suzuki, who... you know, I thought kind of got exposed in Noah, quite honestly. I did not enjoy his time there. But what they did was they took every shortcut imaginable. They worked a GHC title match like they were doing the Tennessee two-step with Lawler in Memphis. And I'll be damned if they didn't have an awesome match right until the finish, when I thought they finally went overboard with the shenanigans and the interference, and it ended up sucking out my enjoyment of the match. But for a large portion of that match, I was in on that story. I was believing the magic. I couldn't believe what they were doing. In my mind, I was buying that Takayama was going to get the gold watch of all gold watch runs, and they were going to have him be Noah's savior. Did not happen. Minoru Suzuki won the match. I compare that to this, where I really think Yo's character is so well-defined, Keisuke Okuda's character is so well-defined. We've seen Okuda be able to have fun, to not, you know, for as much as we like the dumb jock wrestler Keisuke Okuda, he can do comedy spots in a way that I don't think damages his aura. And I think he's actually very good at doing them. It's not like comedy Kurt Angle, where it's like, well, I just want to see this guy just break people's ankles. Why is he wearing the cowboy hat? It's like, no, Okuda maintains legitimacy while also being sucked into either the Punch Tamanaga challenges or what we've seen him do with Hyo so far. And I think this match is going to be utterly absurd. I think it is going to be a train wreck and a car crash, and it's going to be Crash TV coming to Dragon Gate. And I really think it could be great. And the reason I think it could be great is that I really can't rule out the idea of Hio winning this title. I made the Kotoka comparison last week where, Tozawa, Shisa, and Kotoka, was that the match?
I thought it was Taneon.
I can figure it out. I don't know what we have to guess, because there would have been two heels in that match then, and I don't think that was the case. But, you know, when Kotoka won the Open the Brave Gate title, which it was... Wow, you're right. It was Tanizaki. Wow. A triple threat match. Kotoka, Akira Tozawa, and Naoki Tanizaki. Like, no one expected Kotoka to win that match. And then he did. And it was just this mind-blowing... Like, especially because that was Tozawa's Brave Gate run. And I think people really champion him around that time period. It's like, this is our guy. He's making the Brave Gate relevant. Look at him go. I know it's early in Akuda's reign. But, you know... I think it's a 50-50 match. I don't know. Who are you predicting to come out of this weekend with the Brave Gate Championship?
I think I'm leaning towards Okuda only because this is kind of the first title shot for Hio. He's been winning through scumbag manners, and it is something that they could do a nice thing of like, oh, the scumbag finally got his comeuppance. And especially with Yamake Gun forming and that being the super face unit, and that's really the only super face match in the titles for this weekend. I'm leaning towards Okuda, but I totally can see how, like, there is going to be so many shenanigans. It could fall in place and be, like, one of those things. It's like, hey, this is a Dragon Gate Classic kind of match where there is a lot of, like, shenanigans here. If you're not down with Dragon Gate shenanigans, you are not going to like this match, whereas Dragon Gate fans will be like, that was extremely what I wanted. So I think I'm leaning Okuda just only because... unless you're going to finally do the Bensuke run, I guess you can start doing the Bensuke run and have Bensuke versus the whoever comes out of the Twin Gate match. So, yeah, no, you're kind of talking me into this being a coin flip.
For the sake of being different, let me say Hio. If he wins, let me take my victory lap next week. I really do think it's 50-50, and I think you have the out there if you start moving away from whatever this Yoshida versus Mochizuki storyline is going to be. The Twin Gate Challenger, sorry, the Twin Gate Champions, which I guess I gave away my prediction there that I think Hulk and Kai are going to retain. You gotta have new challengers, and Bensuke would certainly fit that bill.
Well, I guess then let's get into the Twin Gate match, because I'm completely diametrically opposed to you. I think that we'll have new champions, because that way, when we move into the hot season, the belts are off them, you can have a Twin Gate match at Wakayama and at Dead or Alive with... Bensuke in that particular is there. And also, I just don't think that, what do you do with Takashi Yoshida and Masaaki Mochizuki if they lose? Like, Yoshida's not going to turn heel again. Like, it seems like that they've completely moved away from that and now watch him turn heel again. I just can't. It's just one of those things that, like, it gives Mochizuki something to do, and it seems like we're at a point now where we're going to now really hyper-focus in on Kai and Yamato going into Dead or Alive.
And I have no point to combat that, because that's exactly it. What do you do with Mochizuki and Yoshida if they lose this match? The question is, what do you do if they win the match, though? Do they just eat up another RED team after this? Because I think that's a unit that, or I guess that's a tandem, rather, that needs strong heel opposition if they're going to be champions. You know, I don't know if a Mochizuki and Yoshida versus Horiguchi and Susumu, just to throw two names out there, I don't know if that title match would make a lot of sense. I think they need to be wrestling heels, and I think they can do that if, you know, either they join Team Boku, which I think would be a waste of their talents, or if they pop into, another unit. I don't know what the long-term plan for them is, but that goes back to the point I've been making the entire show. I don't know what the plan is.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see what comes out of this match. And I feel like the match itself, we've kind of talked to death on the quality of it. Probably will be reliant on how much Mochizuki got, but it's fascinating because how it could kind of play into the rest of it. You know, how everything will come into place, because I do really feel like that we are on the road to the nebulous hot season really starts this week, and I feel like that some pieces will come into place. And I think that, at least me personally, and I totally get what you're saying there about then you have to deal with, like, okay, what's the next RED or heel unit that would face the buddy cop tag team. but I don't know. It's interesting to me. I'm really fascinated by the time in Dragon Gate, and that's something that, like, when we talk about, like, how we were just, I don't even want to say, like, we were bored by the last few weeks' shows. It's just one of those things that and it's something I always tell people. It's like, usually the first 2 weeks in Dragon Gate's year are very, very slow, and things kick up with Champion Gate. So.
Yeah, no, it's all been building to this. I think the title matches have been really well built. I think the Dreamgate match, which we're about to talk about, I think things could have been done a little bit differently to make Ishida look like a more credible challenger. But when it comes to the Brave Gate match, Triangle Gate match, and Twin Gate match, I have no issues there.
Yeah, yeah. And it's, when you look at Shun versus Ishida, it's something where we've seen the face-offs. They've been very solid in the face-offs. And I guess, like, the big question is when do they when they get off the Shun train? Because as soon as they get off the Shun train, he moves back down the card, and Masquerade kind of becomes the new age Jimmy's in a way. So I think he retains. Do you think Ishida wins the belt on Sunday?
Well, what I was told last week when I reached out to someone in Japan to try to get a feel for how this match was going to go, they said to me that the Japanese fans don't even entertain the idea of Ishida winning. That is just, they know it's not going to happen, which was shocking to me because I was really starting to buy into the idea of Ishida possibly winning this match. But removing myself even from the intel I got from someone in Japan, yeah, I think it's a bit of an uphill battle here for Kaito Ishida. I really think Shun Skywalker not only needs to win, but I think he needs it to be a great match. If this even falls in 3 3/4 or a gentleman's 4, if you dare to say such a thing exists,
yeah.
I don't see how that benefits Skywalker. And I think at that point you really have to get the wheels in motion to get the title off of him. But if this delivers, which by all means it should, and I recommend people go on the Dragon Gate Network and rewatch their match from January of 2019, Cork and Hall, the finals of the Rookie Ranking Tournament. It's on there. I just rewatched it a few days ago. It's an unbelievably great match. It plays up everything we've been screaming about Ishida and how good he is at certain things over the past year, year and a half, 2 years. And it is the exact reason that Shun Skywalker is now in the position he's in. I don't think he really had a chance to showcase that in the Ada match. I don't think he had a chance to showcase that in the Ben K match, although he was close, and just the finish kind of threw everything off, because that was on its way to being a great match. So what we have here is a real break-or-make moment for Shun Skywalker. Kaito Ishida is going to be fine. I really do think he can be, if not a 1A main eventer one day, a 1B main eventer, I really think he can be a top-of-the-line guy. Shun Skywalker, though, he needs to deliver here. I think he will, and I think he'll retain.
Yeah, and it's something where we are looking at, like, in the way I look at this year, there's two Kobe worlds, and I think we're now at a time where it's worth kind of considering what they're going to be doing, because they're going to have someone who's going to be at the top of the line to sell tickets at Kobe World, and I am not of the belief that Shun Skywalker is that person. Now, I don't think he loses here. I think that this is kind of like remember when Benkei got the flash knockout of Misaki Mochizuki, and that played into his Champion Gate title shot?
Yes.
That's kind of what I feel like this match is going to be. It's the one that you get the key under his belt, so he's no longer going to be someone that's coming in completely with zero championship attempts. So I think
which
you can accomplish
it. The point you made to me a few weeks ago, sorry to cut you off there, but the point you made to me a few weeks ago is, hey, look at just how few guys have won the Dreamgate belt in their first defense. I mean, off the top of your head, do you remember who has?
Yamato, Eita, and I know there are others, but I'm blanking on them at the moment.
That's okay. I mean, that's exactly the thing. You know, you look at Yamato and Eita, those are the two perfect names to throw out there, actually. Yamato, who is the undoubted ace of the company, and Eita, who, you know, it seems like they're really trying to at some point get him into that position. For as much as I love Kaito Ishida, for as much as you love Kaito Ishida, for as over as Kaito Ishida was when fans could make noise, and that's really important to remember that this guy was getting such loud crowd calls right before the pandemic. For as over as he was then, for as much as we like him, he's not Yamato, he's not Eita, and I've talked myself off of that ledge. You've helped. Congratulations. You've been a first responder to this Open the Dream Gate crisis that Kaito Machine is not winning the belt here.
Well, like, and the reason why I brought up Kobe World is like that, because I'm of the belief, and I'm going to say this now, so when this happens, Case, I can take my victory lap.
There we go.
I think that Yamato is going to regain the belt before Kobe World, or he'll be challenging for the belt on night one of Kobe World.
Yeah, it's been 4 years since he's been in the Dreamgate picture. He's getting this super face unit. It's really hard
getting younger.
No, he's not. My hope is that we can come on the show next week and we can go, okay, I think here's what's going to happen at Dead or Alive. This will feed into King of Gate. This will feed into Kobe World. And we can at least have a loose prediction going on. Because, again, right now it's just the Wild West. And I have no feel for this. If Ishida wins and Okuda wins and the natural vibes lose and all my predictions are wrong, so be it. I can live with that because, like I've been saying this whole show, I don't have a feel for anything going on right now. I'm hoping we get a little bit more clarity. I think, possibly Kagetora joining Masquerade. I think naming the Super Face unit, and I think having these title matches, which they've been building to all year, I think are going to really help us out. So it's a huge week for Dragon Gate. I'm looking forward to it. I think all three shows, just knowing what we know, have a potential to be great. I hope at the very least they're very entertaining.
Yeah. And as you said earlier, these undercards, when they put them together, I suspect that with the show being on Thursday, they're not going to have the undercards out until after that Korakuen to begin with. And there could be some really fun stuff on those undercards. And there's usually are some like interesting things. I mean, nothing could surpass Yuki Oshioka versus Gamma. But
well, you're going to have to do something with Ishida and Skywalker on night one. My guess is that they're going to throw Ishida in a singles match. And I hope it's something really fun. I hope it's something really wacky. We obviously don't have anything for SBK and Dragon Kid at this point on the Champion Gate shows. So we don't know a lot right now, but I trust their direction there putting together those cards.
We don't have anything for Eita. I could very easily see having Dragon Kid, Yamato, Benkei versus Eita, SB Kento, and I'm blanking on Kazuma Sakamoto. I could see that happening very easily.
How crazy is that, by the way? And that's not even a dig at Eita, because I don't think he's done anything wrong. And actually, he's been booked about as strong as anyone in Dragon Gate this year has. He is over 500 in his total matches this year, a winning percentage of 0.522. Thank you to Chris Samsa at Sport of Pro Wrestling for hooking me up with some Dragon Gate stats a few days ago. You will see a detailed preview from myself of the Kaito Ishida versus Shun Skywalker match over at voicesofwrestling.com later this week. I guess we're recording this on Tuesday, and I am now just realizing there's not too many days left in the week, but keep it locked in, voicesofwrestling.com all week. We will have reviews of the Cork and Hall show on Thursday, reviews of Champion Gate, and I will try to have that Cork and Hall review done on Thursday, and if not posted then posted Friday morning. And then Mike and I are still figuring out Champion Gate coverage, but everything there will be at voiceofwrestling.com. And then we'll obviously be back here next Tuesday to break down everything that happened in audio form, to have some more big picture takes after the instant reaction reviews.
And closing us out, I'm taking a look at the rest of the month. We have a Kyoto show. We have a Sambo show. We have Memorial Gate. So we only have essentially 20 days after Sunday until Memorial Gate. So, I mean, things are going to come at us hot and heavy. Not as hot and heavy as they posted the May schedule.
I was going to ask you if you saw the May schedule. Holy shit.
We will be, if you thought that we were fried before when they were doing 5 shows in 7 days, they have 3 televised shows on the May 1st through 3rd, then Dead or Alive on the 5th. They're back on that traditional holiday. Kobe World on the 7th, Sambo Hall on the 9th. Doubleheader across Fukuoka. They're actually having 2 separate days. It's not a day night time. And then the triple shot that they usually have in May in Hokkaido. And it's a lot. It's going to be a lot. It's going to be a real interesting time. And before we go, Case, what is the one thing you want to see happen at Champion Gate this weekend?
This will be very selfish of me. I want at least a 4.5-star match in my notebook by the end of the week.
I want to, and shout out to a friend of the show, Adam Sanderson. I want to see the Bobby Hill special, and I want to see like the reaction when Okuda like either catches the kick and goes screw you, or he takes that bump. Like, that's the thing I'm looking forward to most. Adam Sanderson.
Adam Sanderson, such a nice guy. I really enjoyed, and he just showed up in our mentions one day. I was like, I really like this guy. Final thought for the show, you know, that May schedule, there is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. I think there's 11 or 12 live shows that we're going to get on the Drangate Network in May, and that is obviously King of Gate season, which we, you know, had the abridged empty arena King of Gate last year. I should note, the first week of May, Mike, my school did not give me a spring break this year because of COVID, so they gave us the first week of May off, and then we finish our semester the second week of May.
They gave you Golden Week? You got your own Golden Week.
They basically gave us Golden Week, now that you say that. I think they're calling it, like, Maker's Week, to follow your... I don't know what bullshit they're going to make me do. It's going to be something
cringe.
That it's just like,
cringe.
Yeah, it's something where it's like, hey, man, I'm almost at the finish line. Can we just wrap this up? You know, I'll still be working, obviously, so I don't think I can totally live on Japanese standard time that week. But what a great week to not have to worry about school with an Osaka show, two Kyotos, Dead or Alive, and a May Cork and Hall show, which is likely going to be the start of King of Gate. That is a loaded week if there's ever been one.
Yeah, that kind of reminds me of my undergrad, Elon, goes on a 414, so there's a January semester, and the January semester is always like, go towards your interests, go do a quick study abroad, go do a quick internship, and I took 1 year the assassination of JFK as seen through film.
You know, my school, our spring semester begins the last week of January, and my first 2 years here, it was, we always started later than other schools, but we still, you know, we're starting around mid-January. I have a friend, though, whose dad teaches at this school, and I asked her, I was like, hey, why did they move the start of the semester back? Like, we just don't have school in January anymore, basically. And the working theory that she surmised with her dad was that kids at my school are just too depressed in January, and that this school has just decided to punt that month. Like, my winter break has always been like 6 or 7 weeks long. It's insane. We get out in the middle of December, and again, we don't go back until the end of January. And it's like this weird time. It's just there. It's not an easy time to fill stuff with. It's an awkward amount of time to be free. But the working theory, the best explanation I have, is they're like, look, we've tried having school in January. Trust us. It's just easier to start anew in February and to just act like that month never happened.
No, I respect that. I respect that. I mean, that's embracing the Zoomer mentality, and I think that's a pretty smart thing. But, okay, so is there anything else you want to hit on before we got out of here?
No, that's it.
All right, so we'll be back next Tuesday for recapping these big three shows. We'll have coverage on voicesofwrestling.com of some fashion or other. I know Case has been working on that Shun Skywalker versus Kaito Ishida match, a match preview article for a while, and I'm really excited to see it myself. So for Case, I'm Mike, and thank you for listening to the Voice Gate. We'll be back with you next time. Take care.
Mike Rowe here with a few thoughts on my favorite sweatshirt, a classic zip-up hoodie that used to be navy blue but has since faded to what the fashionistas call a distressed indigo. It's 13 years old, soft as a flannel bathrobe, and after a few hundred dirty jobs, demonstrably and undeniably indestructible. This is the kind of sweatshirt girlfriends like to permanently borrow, but I've held on to this one because I got it from American Giant. American Giant makes all their stuff right here in the USA, so they can control every link in their own supply chain. That matters, because when you buy American Giant, you not only get great quality, you create jobs for people in factory towns all over the country. No pressure, but if you give a damn about the business of making things in America, you got to support the companies who are doing it right. Go to American-Giant.com/Mike to get 20% off your first order. That's American-Giant.com/Mike.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.